Today I'll be talking about a very specific provision within an FTA, a free trade agreement, between Japan and the Philippines. And that's a provision that addresses healthcare worker migration. So I have no relationships to disclose other than, again, my wife is Japanese, so that's, I don't know if that's a conflict. And I'm half Japanese, so I'm half conflicted out. But one of the things about Japan that I think is interesting and something that is very important to understand in the context of this discussion is that Japan is a country that, at least ethnically, has failed to globalize. And that's indicative of the fact that 98.5% of our population is ethnic Japanese. Our immigration rate is 0.01%. And this graph here actually shows the percentage. And you can see the scale is from 0 to 0.15. So we're not doing a great job there. Recent record population decline of 0.22%. I'm going to go a little bit more into the demographics about this, and I'll tell you why that's important. And I can tell you, being a foreigner in Japan is not easy, especially if you're a non-Caucasian, gaijin, as we would call them. So anyway, one of the other things about Japan that's interesting is it's transitioning. It's transitioning to a much older patient population, or even just an older population in general. Japan has the world's oldest population, close to Italy, in 2010. About one-fourth of all people are considered elderly in Japan right now. 2050 population estimates show that 40% of people will be elderly, and that close to half of the people will be dependents, actually. So this is a big burden on the government, and one of the things that they're addressing is, of course, health care workers and the capacity that they do or do not have associated with that. Another thing that exacerbates this demographic change is, of course, the fact that we have a low birth rate. So in Japan, from personal experience, I can tell you, it's very expensive to have kids. So there's a lot of subsidies to have kids. Daycare is really cheap. But a lot of people have no more than one child. And that's a self-selective process, of course. So the youth population is around 13.2% right now. And this combination of a low birth rate and an aging population has created what's called a gyaku pyramid, which is an upside-down pyramid, basically, which is going to have, you know, very top-heavy on the elderly side and very low on the youth side. So the negative impacts of this changing demographic are, of course, that you have, again, the low immigration rate, low birth rate, aging demographic, and then you have an actual shortage of healthcare workers in Japan. And there's three Ks that they call it, and one's kitanai, the other one's kiken, and one's kibishi, which means kitanai is like dirty, kiken is like dangerous, and kibishi is like very difficult, or kitsui, which you can use another word for that as well. So a lot of younger people don't want to become healthcare workers because of these three Ks. And we don't have much migration at all, and even less of it is in healthcare workers. So we have 0.0003% of foreign healthcare workers in Japan. So a shortage of healthcare workers in long-term care settings, of course, because elderly are, it's a changing culture as well. When my mom was growing up in Japan, everyone took care of their parents. You know, live in the same house, etc. But now a lot of elderly people, maybe because of some westernization, are actually moving away from the house and going into long-term care. And the elderly are actually the fastest growing population when it comes to suicides. So they're around 36.6%, and culturally, they have a really hard time being a burden upon their family. So a lot of times, they're unfortunately committing suicide. And there's also an increase in elderly crime, which is pretty interesting as well. So in comparison, you have a country like the Philippines, which is well known for healthcare worker export. You know, that's one of their major economies. And there's a lot of issues associated with the brain drain when you talk about a country actively exporting their healthcare workers. But suffice to say, it is going on. And the reason, of course, is the Philippines believes that this is a form of economic growth, mainly because of remittances coming back to the country. So more than 150,000 Filipino nurses leave to work internationally. That's 85% of their total cohort, I guess you could say. And one-fourth of all nurses, at least estimated, are Filipinos that work abroad, are Filipinos that work abroad as well. And despite that, they have a domestic shortage of their own, but people aren't staying. So that's, of course, an ethical issue. So when we talk about brain drain, we often talk about the pull and push mechanisms associated with this. This is not a traditional brain drain example because these people are actually moving, or the export-based market is pushing them away from their source country. But generally speaking, in Japan, we have an aging population, potential for higher wages, and we have lack of domestic healthcare work capacity. So those are the pull mechanisms. The push mechanisms in the Philippines are that there's poor domestic career advancement. Families want to support their families with remittances from other countries, and they actually have a system that supports the export of these healthcare workers. Yet in Japan, even though these two things would kind of seem to meet up, we have an immigration barrier. That's why we only have 0.003% of healthcare workers. So then let's talk about this Economic Partnership Agreement, an FTA. So this FTA is very unique in my mind because it had a very specific provision regarding healthcare worker migration, something you not necessarily see in all FTAs. And what it included was that there would be a certain provision for healthcare workers to migrate to Japan. Or, well, it's actually bilateral. It's, you know, reciprocal, but there's no healthcare workers going to the Philippines. So it's really intended for Filipino healthcare workers to go to Japan. It contains relatively strict requirements, and it was signed in 2006 by Japan and only ratified in the Philippines in 2008, largely because of protest. And some of that protest actually emanated from the nursing community in the Philippines because they felt that that was a mechanism for them to be exploited. So the general way that it works is there's some recruitment between the two countries. There's a language period of 6 months where they have to learn Japanese. There's some training at the hospitals. They have to pass the national exam in the country. And then if they don't, back home's for you. And even if they do, they're on a temporary working visa with about a 3-year term. So let's see how that works. And I'm going to provide you guys just with a little more detail on it. There's two administrations. Yeah, it's pretty difficult. This is actually for nurses. This is for care workers. So there's a different system for those who aren't registered nurses or NPs or that type of level, people that are more in elderly care. So first, two institutions, the Philippines and Japan, two bureaucratic institutions, match the candidates. And then the Japanese institution actually places that candidate within the hospital. So there's an intermediary between the nurse and the hospital, the receiving hospital. They enter into formal employment, 3 months of language training, 6 months of Japanese nursing training. They have to pass this, you know, mandatory credentialing test. And I can tell you, Tagalog is very different than Japanese. I mean, we have Chinese characters, you know, it's hard. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. And if they don't pass within 3 tries, they got to go home. So one of the things we wanted to do when we assessed the policy analysis of whether this is a successful provision within the EPA is we looked at the language testing and licensure passage rates. We looked at the utilization of the skills for the healthcare workers. We looked at the policy intent of the two countries when they entered into this provision. And we measured the general cost effectiveness, kind of a back of a napkin type of calculation of how expensive it was. So first, not surprisingly to probably anybody here, the passage rates for the tests are terrible. It's very hard to learn Japanese. I speak Japanese, but I can't read or write, so I'm kind of illiterate, as you would say. It's very hard to learn, and if you're not Japanese, obviously, you're probably not having a lot of exposure to Japanese. Their temporary status is difficult, so even if they pass the test, they only got 3 years, and then they got to re-up every 3 years. The response was that Japan did slightly change their test, and I won't go into the real details of it, but even that related to a very small passage rate. Now, also, prior to passing the required nurse licensure exam, actually, these nurses stay in country as a nurse's aide, which is a much lower position than a nurse. So, arguably, they're not utilizing their full skill set, and they can be, you know, that can be utilized better in a different country. So that leads to what we call brain waste, which is another term of art in the brain drain category. I hope I'm not confusing you too much. The low passage rate also relates to a really extremely high cost for the program. And I'll show you how many people have passed. But it's been estimated that the Japanese taxpayer, and it's a Japanese study, you can tell, is paying about $1 million per successful candidate. So that could arguably be used for something else. And the policy intent gap is pretty big, too, because when the Philippines negotiated this provision, they assumed that they would get increased job opportunity, reduce unemployment in their own country, and increase remittances, which would lead to economic growth. But on the Japan side, the Japanese diet was very concerned with quality of the candidates. They were concerned that it wouldn't meet their shortages anyway, because they actually have a cap on this provision. And the Japanese Nursing Association was actually against any reciprocity on licensure. So even though they agreed to the same provision, you can see that there's a huge policy intent gap between the two countries. And the result is, of course, as I'll show you, it's a failed program. So these are the cohorts here, and I have a better infograph than this. But generally speaking, 15 people have passed within 3 years out of 209. So that's about a 7.18% passage rate. Not great. Well, it's actually... It's 215, I think it was, if I'm correct. 209. And that's all the cohorts. So sometimes the cohorts have, obviously they have 3 years to pass. So so the last cohort here still has like maybe two more opportunities to pass. So technically, they're not out of the game yet, as you would say. But, you know, not good passage rates. So the number of candidates has been pretty steady. The number of candidates is around 60. Total pass is 15. And you can see this downward decline of people actually passing from the first year. And, you know, basically it's because the language requirements are so, so difficult. And I can tell you, you know, reading kanji and understanding Japanese medical terminology isn't even beyond me. And I've lived in Japan, I've worked in Japan, and I've studied in Japan. So it's a very daunting task. But there is another question about whether they need to learn those tasks in order to provide safe patient care. So one of the things, and I'm just about over, that we look at when we look at these kind of failed policies, we look at other models and try to figure out if those can be maybe applied to this particular case study. And the other thing that's very important about this is I don't mention it too much, but Indonesia also has the same healthcare worker migration provision with Japan as the Philippines does. And countries could use this provision as a model in future FTAs. Now, my personal opinion is that Japan is the second largest trading partner of the Philippines. And in the scope of the whole agreement, lowering tariffs, economic development, FDI, maybe, you know, countries are trading off certain types of provisions. So maybe this wasn't something that Japan was expecting to be successful, and maybe it's designed to do so. But in the interest of it being successful, based upon, you know, the fact that Japan does need healthcare workers. My grandma, she was in a nursing home for a long period of time in Japan, and you basically can't get in unless you're on a huge, long waiting list. I mean, we do have an immediate need, and young people in Japan don't want to do the work. And yet we don't migrate people in to do the work when they're available. So the U.S. model is a little bit better. So we have a lot of Filipino nurses here in the U.S. And one of the things we do with Filipino nurses is we have them test and do their licensure in-country. So they do the language. Now, arguably, of course, Filipinos learn English very well at a very early age. So I will totally, you know, acknowledge that that's not the same barrier that they have going to Japan. But they do allow in-country testing, which is arguably a better model than bringing them over to Japan, having them fail at a test, and then sending them back home. It also builds capacity within that individual country for training, which even if they don't pass, perhaps they can use that. There's some ability for them to use that in their local market. So it's better to train those people in-country. There's a cap as well on the provision itself, which hasn't been hit, obviously, because not many people are passing. But if these reforms were enacted, then perhaps that cap should be lifted or there should be a more dynamic cap. And, of course, the reduction of these two bureaucratic institutions. Because the fact is that you have an intermediary between the nurse and the hospital, and they're costing the program a lot of money. And arguably, maybe that intermediary can be, you know, shortened or reduced in task, and that can, of course, improve the outcome of the program. So, in conclusion, I'd just say that, you know, in Japan, from a very, very, you know, personal standpoint, we do have a huge healthcare worker shortage. Elderly people aren't getting in to long-term care facilities. They're causing crime. They're committing suicide, and yet we haven't addressed it as a country in figuring out where our healthcare workers are going to come from. There's one place that may have an opportunity to do that, and there's a provision that supposedly does that, but it's not working. So we need to improve that, and in the context of trade, it's very important. It's a very kind of niche area, but I think it's important, and it's also important, again, because other FTAs could adopt this provision thinking that it's successful. So I'll end with that, and I'll just say real quickly, acknowledgement to my students who worked on this. One of them's Japanese, one of them's a Filipina, so they have pretty good, you know, cultural background on this. So thank you very much.